ever feel like you're drowning in healthcare information? Just stacks and stacks of paper, and you're trying to figure out what actually, you know, applies to you.
Oh, absolutely. It's like trying to assemble furniture with instructions in 50 languages. That feeling is exactly what we want to cut through here on the deep dive.
Yeah, we grab the source materials, dig in, and pull out the stuff that really matters. So you get the insights without, well, without the headache.
And today, it's a big one we're tackling. Medicare. We've used the official Medicare.pdf document as our guide here.
Right. And our mission is pretty straightforward. Give you a clear handle on how Medicare works, what are the pieces, why should you care? Basically, a shortcut to getting up to speed.
Exactly. We're going to unpack the main structure, you know, the four parts, A, B, C, and D.
But hold on. Before we dive into A, B, C, D, who actually gets Medicare? It's not just hitting 65, right? Although that's, well, that's the big one.
That's the most common way, definitely. Turning 65, being a U.S. citizen or legal resident for 5 years. But interestingly, you don't have to be retired.
Oh. That's a good point. A lot of people work past 65 now.
Yeah, and they can still enroll. Yeah. So for you, if you're still working and have, say, good coverage from your job, you might think about maybe delaying Part B, but Part A might still make sense.
Okay, so 65 is key, but not the only route. What else?
Well, disability is another major pathway. If you've been getting Social Security or Railroad Retirement Disability benefits for 24 months, you're generally eligible.
3 years, okay.
And there's a specific fast track for people diagnosed with ALS Lou Gehrig's disease. They become eligible the same month their disability benefits kick in.
Wow. Okay, so that can provide support much, much sooner than 65 for people in those situations.
Definitely crucial support.
Right. Okay, let's get into the parts then. Mm-hmm. Part A, hospital insurance. That sounds pretty self-explanatory.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah.
Part A covers your inpatient hospital stays, care in a skilled nursing facility, that's SNF hospice care, and some home health services too.
Kind of the bigger, more intensive care needs then?
Exactly. And the good news for a lot of folks is that Part A is often premium free.
Premium free? How does that work?
Well, if you or your spouse paid Medicare taxes while working for at least 40 quarters, basically 10 years of work, you generally don't pay a monthly premium for Part A.
Ah, so it's funded through those payroll taxes we all pay.
That's right. 1.45% from the employee, 1.45% from the employer. So, yeah, for many of you who've worked consistently in the U.S., that basic hospital coverage is already paid for, in a sense.
Okay, premium free is great. But nothing's ever completely free, right? There are still costs when you use the services, deductibles, things like that.
Absolutely. Part A has cost sharing. First up is a deductible. For 2025, it's $1,632. But here's the really important bit. It's per benefit period, not per year.
Per benefit period. Okay, unpack that. What does that mean practically?
So a benefit period starts the day you're admitted as an inpatient to a hospital or skilled nursing facility. It ends once you haven't had any inpatient care for 60 consecutive days.
60 days. So if you, say, go into the hospital in February, get out, and then have to go back in May,
yeah,
if there were more than 60 days between,
you could potentially pay that $1,632 deductible again for the May stay. It can happen multiple times in 1 year.
Wow. Okay. That's critical to understand. It's not like your typical annual insurance deductible.
Not at all. So once you've met that deductible for the benefit period, what happens in the hospital?
Right. What's next?
For days 1 through 60 of your hospital stay within that benefit period, you pay nothing more. Zero coinsurance.
Okay. That's good.
But then for days 61 through 90, you pay a daily coinsurance. In 2025, that's $419 per day.
Per day. Ouch. And after day 90?
After day 90, you start dipping into what are called lifetime reserve days. Everyone gets 60 of these days over their entire lifetime. They don't renew.
60 total for life.
Yep. And using one of those costs $838 per day in 2025. Once you've used all 60 lifetime reserve days, Part A stops paying for hospital days and any future benefit periods beyond day 90.
So those are really a limited resource for very long stays.
Definitely. You need to be aware they're finite.
Okay, that's hospitals. What about the skilled nursing facility care you mentioned? Similar structure.
Yeah.
Similar idea, different numbers. For a skilled nursing facility stay again, within that benefit period, Part A covers days 1 through 20 in full. Zero cost to you.
20 days covered.
Okay. Then for days 21 through 100, you pay a daily coinsurance. That's $209.50 per day for 2025.
And after day 100 in a skilled nursing facility.
After day 100 in a single benefit period, Part A coverage for the SNF stay ends. You'd be responsible for all costs.
Got it. What about hospice and home health under Part A?
Hospice care is mostly covered. There might be a very small copay, like maybe $5 for outpatient prescription drugs for symptom management, and a 5% coinsurance if you need inpatient respite care.
Respite care.
Yeah, that's short-term inpatient care to give your usual caregiver a break.
Okay. And home health.
For covered home health services under Part A, like skilled nursing care or therapy at home, there's generally no cost sharing, $0. But if you need durable medical equipment, like a walker or hospital bed, that's usually covered under Part B, and you'd pay 20% coinsurance for that.
Okay. So some overlap or coordination with Part B there.
Exactly.
So we've got the costs. What are the big limitations or rules people bump up against with Part A?
Well, we've hit on the benefit periods resetting and those non-renewable lifetime reserve days. A huge one for skilled nursing facility care is the 3-day rule.
The 3-day rule. What's that?
Generally, for Part A, to cover your stay in a skilled nursing facility, you must have first spent at least 3 consecutive days as an inpatient in a hospital. And the day you're discharged doesn't count.
3 consecutive inpatient days before going to the SNF. That seems quite specific.
It is. And it can be tricky. But, and this is important, there are exceptions. Some Medicare Advantage plans waive this rule, and so do some accountable care organizations, or ECOs.
So it's not always a hard requirement, depending on your specific plan setup?
Correct. Always good to check your specific situation.
Good to know. Any other major things Part A doesn't cover?
Yes. A big one is custodial care. That's help with daily activities like bathing, dressing, eating. If that's the only kind of care you need, Part A generally won't cover it, even in a nursing facility.
So it's really focused on skilled medical care, not just assistance with living.
Precisely. And remember, the 100-day limit per benefit period for skilled nursing care and the fact that you have to continue needing skilled care for Part A to keep covering it within that period, it's not designed for long-term residential stays.
Right. Acute, shorter-term sealed needs. Makes sense. Okay, let's shift gears to Part B, medical insurance. What falls under this umbrella?
Part B is really broad. It covers your doctor visits, outpatient hospital services, lab tests, x-rays, lots of preventive services, and some home health care as well.
So more the day-to-day doctor stuff, tests, checkups, outpatient procedures.
Yeah, think of it that way. Plus things like ambulance services, durable medical equipment we mentioned earlier, mental health services, quite a lot.
And unlike Part A for most people, Part B definitely has a monthly premium, doesn't it?
It does. The standard monthly premium for Part B in 2025 is set at $185.
Standard premium. Does that mean some people pay more?
Yes. This is where income comes into play again. If your modified adjusted gross income from usually 2 years prior is above a certain threshold, you'll pay an income-related monthly adjustment amount, IRMAA.
IRMA. Heard that term before.
Yeah. It's an extra amount added to your Part B premium, and it can be significant. Depending on your income level, the total premium could go up, potentially reaching around $594.30 per month in 2025 for the highest earners.
Wow, that's a huge difference from the standard $185.
Yeah.
So your retirement income really matters for Part B costs.
Absolutely. Something you need to factor into your planning.
Okay, premium covered. What about costs when you use Part B services? Deductible. Coinsurance.
Yep. Part B has an annual deductible. For 2025, it's $257. Once you've met that deductible for the year,
then you start paying coinsurance.
Usually, yes. For most services covered by Part B, you'll pay 20% of the Medicare-approved amount, and Medicare pays the other 80%.
The classic 80-20 split.
Pretty much, but a really great feature of Part B is preventative services. Many of them things like your annual wellness visit, flu shots. Many cancer screenings have $0 cost sharing. No deductible, no coinsurance, if the provider accepts Medicare.
Well, that's fantastic. So it really encourages prevention.
It does. You'll often see them marked with a star in the Medicare materials. Though some outpatient hospital services might have a copayment instead of the 20% coinsurance.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the Medicare approved amount. Does that mean doctors can charge more?
Potentially. It depends on whether the doctor accepts assignment.
Accepts assignment. What's that?
If a provider accepts assignment, they agree that the Medicare-approved amount is the full payment they get. You pay your 20% and deductible if it applies. Medicare pays its 80%, and that's it.
Okay, sounds simple enough. What if they don't accept assignment?
If they don't accept assignment, they're called non-participating providers. They can charge you more than the Medicare-approved amount. This extra is called an excess charge, and it can be up to 15% above the approved amount.
And you, the patient, have to pay that extra 15% yourself.
That's right. It comes out of your pocket, on top of your deductible, and 20% coinsurance on the approved amount. So for you, checking if your doctor accepts assignment can save you money.
Definitely a good tip. What are some other key limitations or things Part B doesn't cover well?
Well, first, everything generally needs to be medically necessary, either to diagnose or treat a condition or be a covered preventative service. That's a fundamental rule.
Makes sense.
We talked about assignment. Another thing is therapy services, physical, occupational, speech therapy. While there aren't hard dollar caps anymore, if your therapy costs reach a certain threshold, $2,410 in 2024 for PTSLP combined, another for OT, your provider might need to add extra documentation confirming it's still medically necessary.
So not a hard stop, but maybe a checkpoint for ongoing therapy.
Kind of, yeah. Just ensures continued necessity.
Okay. What else is generally not covered by Part B?
Big categories here. Most prescription drugs you take yourself at home. That's what Part D is for. Routine dental care, like cleanings, fillings, dentures, routine eye exams for glasses or contacts, and hearing aids.
The classic trio.
Yeah.
Dental, vision, hearing, generally out for Part B.
Generally out. And like Part A, Part B typically doesn't cover healthcare you get outside the U.S. Very, very limited exceptions.
Right. The international travel issue again. So if you travel a lot, original Medicare A and B might leave you exposed overseas.
That's a major consideration, yes.
You mentioned preventive services having $0 cost sharing. Can you give a few more examples? That sounds like a real highlight of Part B.
Oh, it really is. Beyond the annual wellness visit and flu shots, you've got screenings for various cancers, colorectal, breast, mammograms, prostate, lung cancer for high-risk individuals, cervical cancer.
That's comprehensive.
Plus screenings for diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, depression screenings, hepatitis C screening, HIV screening, vaccinations like pneumococcal, hepatitis B for those at risk, the COVID-19 vaccines, bone mass measurements. The list is quite long.
Wow. So focusing on prevention is definitely baked into Part B.
Very much so. Things like obesity screening and counseling, tobacco cessation counseling too, often at no cost to you.
Okay. Great overview of A and B, what we call original Medicare. Now, Part C, Medicare Advantage. This is where things get a bit different, right? It's an alternative.
Exactly. Part C or Medicare Advantage is another way to get your Medicare coverage. Instead of getting benefits directly from the government program, original Medicare, you enroll in a private insurance plan that contracts with Medicare.
A private plan run by an insurance company.
Correct. These plans are required by law to cover at least everything that original Medicare Parts A and B cover. The only exception is hospice care that's still covered directly by Part A, even if you're in an Advantage plan.
Okay, so they cover A and B services, except hospice. Why would someone choose this private plan route?
Well, there are a few potential draws. Often these plans bundle everything together, your hospital, medical, and frequently prescription drug coverage, Part D, into one single plan, an all-in-one kind of approach.
Convenience factor, maybe?
That, and often they include extra benefits that original Medicare doesn't cover. We just talked about dental, vision, hearing aids. Many Advantage plans offer some coverage for those. Also things like gym memberships, like silver sneakers, transportation to medical appointments, meal delivery after a hospital stay.
So they can add perks beyond the standard Medicare package.
They can, yes. Another potential advantage is cost structure. Many Advantage plans have lower monthly premiums than original Medicare, plus a Part D plan, plus a Medigap plan. And crucially, almost all Advantage plans have an annual maximum out-of-pocket limit for your Part A and Part B services. Original Medicare doesn't have that safety net unless you buy a separate Medigap policy.
Okay. Lower premiums, potentially, extra benefits, and an out-of-pocket cap. Sounds pretty good. What's the catch? Or the trade-off?
The main trade-off is usually network restrictions and flexibility. Most Medicare Advantage plans operate with provider networks.
Meaning you have to use their doctors and hospitals?
Often, yes, especially with HMOs, health maintenance organizations. To get the lowest costs or sometimes any coverage at all for non-emergencies, you need to use providers within the plan's network. PPOs, preferred provider organizations, offer more flexibility to go out of network, but you'll almost always pay more if you do.
And referrals. Sometimes you need permission to see a specialist.
Right. HMOs typically require you to choose a primary care physician and get a referral from them before seeing most specialists. PPOs usually don't require referrals.
So original Medicare gives you freedom to see any doctor accepting Medicare anywhere in the country, while Advantage plans often limit your choice of providers to save costs or manage care.
That's the fundamental difference, yes. Less flexibility, potentially lower costs, and more benefits with Advantage plans. More freedom, potentially higher overall costs if you add Part D and Medigap with original Medicare.
Could you quickly run through the main types of Advantage plans? You mentioned HMOs and PPOs.
Sure. HMOs generally have lower costs, but require networks and referrals. PPOs offer more provider choice, in and out of network, but out costs more, and usually no referrals.
Okay.
Then there are PFFS plans, private fee for service. These plans set their own payment rates and your cost sharing. They might have a network, or they might allow you to see any provider who accepts the plan's terms for each service, which isn't guaranteed.
Sounds a bit more complex.
Can be. Then you have SMPs, special needs plans. These are tailored for specific groups, people eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid, dual eligibles, people with certain chronic conditions like diabetes or heart failure, or people living in institutions like nursing homes.
So specialized plans for specific populations.
Exactly. And finally, there are MSA plans, medical savings accounts. These combine a high deductible health plan with a special savings account funded by Medicare. You use the account money to pay for health care until the high deductible is met.
Okay, quite a variety under the Part C umbrella. Lots to compare there.
Definitely requires careful shopping during enrollment periods.
Right. Okay, that brings us to the final piece. Part D, prescription drug coverage. How does this fit in?
Part D is specifically for covering outpatient prescription drugs, the kind you typically pick up at a pharmacy. Original Medicare A and B generally doesn't cover these.
So if you need help paying for your regular meds, you need Part D.
Correct. You can get Part D coverage in two main ways. If you have original Medicare, you can enroll in a standalone prescription drug plan or PDP.
A separate private plan just for drugs.
Yes. Or if you choose a Medicare Advantage plan, Part C, many of them include prescription drug coverage already built in. Those are called MATD plans.
Got it. So either a standalone PDP with original Medicare or an MAPD plan.
That's right.
And Part D, like Part B, has costs. Premiums, deductibles.
Yes. Part D plans have their own monthly premium, which varies widely from plan to plan. The national average basic premium for 2025 is estimated around $36.78, but yours could be higher or lower.
And income can affect this premium too. Another IRMAA.
Yep. The income-related monthly adjustment amount applies to Part D premiums as well for higher earners.
Okay. What about deductibles?
Most Part D plans have an annual deductible. The maximum allowed by Medicare in 2025 is $545. However, many plans have a lower deductible, some even $0, especially for generic drugs.
And after the deductible, you pay. Co-pays. Co-insurance.
Exactly. When you fill a prescription, you'll typically pay a co-payment, a fixed dollar amount like $10, or co-insurance, a percentage of the drug's cost, like 25%.
Does it vary by drug?
Yes, heavily. Plans use formularies, lists of covered drugs, and they usually paste drugs into different tiers. Lower tiers, like preferred generics, have the lowest copays, while higher tiers, non-preferred brands, specialty drugs, have higher copays or coinsurance.
So you really need to check how your specific medications are covered by a plan.
Absolutely critical. But there's some really big news for Part D costs starting in 2025.
Oh, what's changing?
Two major things. First, there will be a $2,000 annual cap on out-of-pocket spending for Part D drugs. Once your spending on covered drugs hits $2,000 for the year, you'll pay $0 for the rest of the year.
Wow, a $2,000 maximum out-of-pocket? That's huge for people with expensive medications.
It's a very significant change, yes. The second big change is a $35 monthly cap on the cost of covered insulin products.
$35 a month max for insulin. Regardless of deductible.
Correct. Starts in 2025. Huge relief for many people with diabetes.
Those are really substantial improvements. Is there help available for people who still struggle with Part D costs, even with these changes?
Yes, there is. The Low Income Subsidy Program, often called Extra Help. It's a federal program that helps people with limited income and resources pay for their Part D premiums, deductibles, and copays.
Extra Help. Okay. So worth looking into if costs are a burden.
Definitely. It can make a massive difference.
You mentioned formularies, the lists of covered drugs. Are plans required to cover certain types of drugs?
Yes. Medicare has rules. Plans must cover at least two drugs in most common therapeutic categories. And they have to cover all or substantially all drugs in six specific protected classes.
Protected classes.
Yeah. These include drugs used to treat conditions like seizures, anticonvulsants, depression, antidepressants, psychosis, antipsychotics, HIV/AIDS, antiretrovirals, cancer, antineoplastics, and drugs to prevent organ transplant rejection, immunosuppressants.
So they can't just exclude all drugs for, say, depression.
Correct. They have to offer options within those critical categories. But again, the specific drugs covered can vary, so checking the formulary for your meds is key.
And do plans have ways to manage drug use? like needing approval first?
Yes, they use utilization management tools. Common ones are prior authorization, where the plan needs to approve the drug before covering it, often requiring info from your doctor. Step therapy, where you might have to try a cheaper preferred drug first before they cover a more expensive one. And quantity limits, restricting how much of a drug you can get per fill.
So, hoops you might have to jump through sometimes, even if a drug is on the formulary.
Potentially, yes. WAYS plans try to control costs and ensure appropriate use.
Okay, so I've got A, B, C, and D. How do they all actually work together for someone? If you stick with Original Medicare, A and B, you don't automatically get D, right?
Correct. Original Medicare is fee-for-service. You get Part A, usually premium-free, and enroll in Part B, pay a premium. If you want drug coverage, you must actively choose and enroll in a separate, standalone Part D plan and pay its premium.
And maybe add a Medigap plan, too, to cover the 20% and deductibles?
Often, yes. So Original Medicare path might look like A plus B plus D plus Medigap.
Whereas with Medicare Advantage, Part C.
Part C replaces your A and B coverage from the government. The private plan delivers those benefits. And most MA plans, the MAPDs, already include Part D drug coverage bundled in. So it might just be one plan, one card covering A, B, and D, plus potentially those extra benefits like dental vision.
But with the network restrictions, usually.
But with the network restrictions, typically. So it's a choice between the flexibility of Original Medicare, plus potentially buying separate D and Medigap, versus the bundled convenience and potential extra benefits and OOP cap of an MA plan, but likely with network limits.
And that hospice coverage always stays with Original Part A, even if you choose an MA plan.
That's the one constant, yes. Hospice is always Part A.
What about traveling outside the U.S.? We touched on that. Original Medicare is basically useless abroad.
Pretty much. Very, very narrow exceptions. Like if you're traveling through Canada, between Alaska and another state, or true emergency right near the U.S. border in Canada or Mexico. Otherwise, you're generally not covered by Original A and B overseas.
And Medicare Advantage or Medigap.
Some MA plans do offer coverage for emergencies when traveling abroad, but you have to check the specific plan. Similarly, some Medigap plans, specifically C, D, F, G, M, and N, offer foreign travel emergency coverage, but it usually has a lifetime limit and requires a deductible and coinsurance.
So if you travel internationally, you really need to investigate those supplemental options, MA or Medigap, for potential coverage.
Absolutely. Don't assume you're covered by just A and B.
Okay. Let's talk about getting into Medicare. The initial enrollment period, or IEP, when is that?
The IEP is your first and generally best chance to enroll. It's a 7-month window that's tied to your 65th birthday.
7 months. How is it structured?
It starts 3 months before the month you turn 65, includes the month you turn 65, and ends 3 months after the month you turn 65.
3 months before, the month of, 3 months after. Got it.
Unless your birthday is on the first of the month.
Ah, a special rule.
Yep. If your birthday is, say, June 1st, you actually become eligible for Medicare on May 1st. So your entire 7-month IEP shifts 1 month earlier, too. It would start February 1st in that case.
Good to know for those first of the monthers.
Yeah.
And when does your coverage actually start, based on when you enroll in that window?
It depends. If you enroll in any of the 3 months before your 65th birthday month, or eligibility month, your coverage starts on the first day of your birthday eligibility month. Nice and smooth.
Best case scenario, then, enroll early.
Definitely. If you enroll during your birthday eligibility month, coverage starts the first day of the following month.
Okay, a 1 month delay.
Right. But if you wait and enroll in one of the 3 months after your birthday eligibility month, your coverage start date gets pushed back even further, potentially starting 2 or even 3 months after you enroll.
Ooh, so waiting until the end of the IEP means a potential gap in coverage.
Exactly. You could be without coverage for a few months if you delay enrolling until the tail end of your IEP. Planning ahead is key.
So during the 7-month IEP, what can you sign up for? A, B, C, D.
You can sign up for Part A and or Part B. If you enroll in A and B, you can then also enroll in a Part D plan or choose to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan, Part C.
Okay. And are there strategic things to think about during the IEP, like that delaying Part B idea if you're still working?
Absolutely. That's a big one. If you or your spouse are still working and have good health coverage through that current job, what Medicare calls creditable coverage, you might be able to delay enrolling in Part B without facing a late enrollment penalty later.
But you might still want Part A.
Often, yes. If Part A is premium free for you based on work history, there's usually no downside to taking it right away. Even if you delay B, it doesn't cost you anything monthly.
Okay, so decide on B based on current employer coverage. What else?
You need to make that fundamental choice. Original Medicare, A plus B, or Medicare Advantage, C. If you go original, you then need to decide about adding Part D for drugs and potentially a Medigap plan for cost sharing.
And when's the best time to get that Medigap plan?
The absolute best time is during your six-month Medigap open enrollment period. This starts the month your Part B coverage becomes effective, provided you're 65 or older. During this window, insurance companies cannot deny you coverage or charge you more due to your health. Outside of this window, getting Medigap can be much harder or more expensive.
So that Medigap decision is really tied closely to when your Part B starts. Lots to juggle in that IEP timeframe.
It really is. A lot of important decisions with long-term consequences.
Okay, well, this has been incredibly helpful, really breaking down the pieces. Right. So just to kind of wrap up the core message here.
Medicare isn't just one thing. It's got these distinct parts. A for hospital, B for medical, C for the private plan alternative, D for drugs. Each has its own rules, costs, coverage.
And understanding those differences, plus the eligibility rules and those key enrollment periods like the IEP, that's really the foundation for making smart choices about your healthcare, right?
Exactly. We've tried to pull out the most critical nuggets from the official Medicare info, giving you that solid base to work from.
So as you're listening, maybe think about your own situation, or maybe your parents or loved ones. Which part matters most right now? Is it understanding the drug coverage in Part D? Or figuring out that original versus advantage choice? Or maybe just nailing down those enrollment dates?
Yeah, pinpointing your key questions is the next step. And remember, there are resources like the official Medicare website, state counseling programs, SAPs, that can help with those specific questions.
Definitely. Well, hopefully with this deep dive, you feel much better equipped to navigate the Medicare landscape, ask the informed questions, and really take control of your healthcare decisions.
That's the goal.
So here's a final thought to chew on. Looking ahead, with healthcare costs always evolving and an aging population, what specific aspect of Medicare's future, maybe a policy change, a technological shift, a funding challenge, do you think will have the biggest impact on beneficiaries down the road? Something to ponder.